Hello, I'm Katie Damborski, Boats Online Yachts Editor. Welcome to the special Big Boat interview. This week I caught up with Captain Glenn Shepherd, best known as the captain who stars in Below Deck Sailing Yacht. I say he stars in the show, but he tells me he's really just going about his day, doing his job at the helm of Parsifal 3, and the cameras just capture everything as it's happening. Apparently, Below Deck is way more fly on the wall than I'd ever imagined, and he says he often doesn't see all the drama that goes down on his boat until it's aired months later. As well as chatting all things Below Deck, I hear all about Glenn's love for Puruni Navis, his journey that led him into yachting, and his opinions on what impact Below Deck has had on the superyacht industry. I hope you enjoy the interview. So thank you very much for joining us, Captain Shepherd. Can you tell me where you're joining us from?
Hi, Katia. I'm on board Parsifal. We are in Denia, Spain, which is kind of halfway between Valencia and Alicante, if you're familiar with the area. It's just like Ibiza is just across from us, about 60 miles out.
Okay, so you're still kind of enjoying in the Med, but I hear you're from Canada. So how did you kind of get into boating from there?
Well, I grew up in Canada, but I left there a long, long time ago. I've been traveling a lot in my life, but I spent most of my life in Europe. I love it over here. So, I got my first start in yachting, in 84. I was backpacking around, Europe, didn't have a lot of money. I met a guy in Rome, had a little motor sailor, ended up, helping him out for the summer. I spent like from Easter until Christmas on the boat, and just fell in love with the whole idea of boat boating, especially in the Mediterranean, but boating in general. That's kind of where I got my start. And then I started in super yachts. I bought my own boat in 92, a little French sloop, like a 34 footer. Did a lot of cruising in the Med. And then I started super yachting in 2000. So I think 22 years ago.
Okay, cool. So you started on a motor sailor, and then it sounds like you kind of got back into sailing. So you've done a bit of both motor and sail.
Yeah, exactly. Well, my first super yacht that I worked on, I found a job in, you know, I cut my teeth in Fort Lauderdale. First was the boat show in October 2000. And soon after that, I got a job, started as a day worker, and then got a full-time deckhand job on a 38-meter Christensen motor yacht. And so I think I did about 9 months on that boat. We ended up crossing the Atlantic, came over to the Med, did a lot of charter on the Med. And in the fall, I got off in Monaco. And about a week later, I started work on a 53-meter Perini. And then I've kind of been on big sailboats since then.
Okay, so you started on a Perini and now you're back on a Perini. So it's gone full circle.
When I was cruising around the Med on my little boat, I'd always see these big black catches, you know, and I was always amazed by them. I'd see the crew coming and dropping off guests or owners or whatever, and I was like, you know, back then it was a different world in the superyacht, you know, industry. It was really hard to figure out how it all worked. So I was like, what's that all about? And that looks kind of interesting. And it took me a little while to get all my ducks in a row before I decided to try it and see if I liked it. I wasn't sure if I wanted to work on super yachts because it was my passion to sail around the Med, but not necessarily that, you know, like if you're a big fan of golf, doesn't necessarily mean you want to be a caddy as your job, you know? I thought maybe if I work in yachting, it might actually ruin yachting for me. So when I kind of got everything organized in 2000, I was living in North America, came over to Europe, had my boat in Greece, did a summer around Greece on my boat, put it away, and I said, okay, I'm going to go give this a go. I had a cousin or a friend of a friend who was living in Lauderdale. They got me into a crew house, kind of showed me the ropes, talked about all the stuff that was involved, and I figured, I'm going to give this a try. And that was 23 years ago, and I haven't looked back since. Like, this is probably the last thing I'm going to do as far as work, you know. But yeah, I was very lucky to get into it then, and yeah, it was perfect for me. I didn't realize it until I started. But yeah, it's perfect.
Okay, brilliant. And it sounds like, as you said, because you came from the sailing background, now you're back on sailing yachts. You're marrying the passion with the job. You're not just kind of cruising around on a motor yacht. It sounds like the sailing is what you really love doing. So do you prefer the sailing to the motor yachts?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I talk to a lot of people coming into the industry, and some people, there's something about sailing, you know, it's hard to put your finger on it, but there's, I don't know, the romance of sail and a big boat under sail is kind of something special. But I tell people if they're coming into the industry, in many ways, large sailing yachts and large motor yachts have a lot in common. A lot of time we're doing the same kind of thing, but on sailboats there are other things you need to know, other things that are happening and the boat heels and all that kind of stuff. But I always advise people, just get on any super yacht, motor yacht, doesn't matter. Do your year, and then it's going to be much easier to find your next job. So if your passion is sailboats, my understanding of the industry is sailboats only make up about 10 or 15% of the super yacht, world. And so you're cutting a very small slice of pie that you're trying to work your way into the industry. It's better to go for the whole thing first. Once you have that year under your belt, now you're hireable from a distance. You know, people know that you know how it works. So you can hone in on that sailboat job. So for me, that was the same kind of experience. I took whatever job came first. And for me, it ended up being, on a motor. I don't think I had a few job offers at the time that I took that job, but I don't think any of them were from sailboats. And I just got the first one. And I remember being in Monaco and seeing all these Parinis again. And, that became my goal. And then when I saw this job pop up on the Perini, I went for it. I got that job. I ended up staying on that boat. I don't know if I should say the name. I guess it's okay. I'm not going to say the owner. She's called Atmosphere. I think she's a pretty famous, well-known boat. She was an early Perini, I think she was built obviously in the 90s, maybe the middle 90s or something like that. I got the job on that boat, and I went from there to Mirabella 5, which is the largest sloop in the world, did a couple of years on Mirabella 5, and then I got involved in this boat. So I haven't really been on that many boats. I was captain of Mirabella 3 for a little while after I got off 5, just to kind of help out the family. Then I got this one, and I first got involved here in 2008, in the fall of 2008, and I'm still here. They can't get rid of me, So, but luckily now I'm on rotation, so it's not a full-time gig. I've been on rotation for the almost coming up to 2 years, and it's perfect. I love it. I'm getting a little long in the tooth to be doing this full time. So rotation for me is perfect. I'm getting ready to go on leave soon. And I'll be, as soon as the weather gets a little warmer, I'll be going back on my boat. I've got a Jeannot 42 footer, which is near Corfu in Greece right now. I've been cruising from Sardinia, the islands, Capri, Ischia, Procida, all that, the islands around Sicily, the Aeolian Islands, and then finally into the Ionian in the fall.
Very nice. Okay, cool. So you can have a nice little break, but not a break from sailing, because you'll just be going from a big one to a small sailing yacht.
Exactly. Some of my friends think I'm crazy because I work on a big sailboat, and then, as soon as I have time off, I go on another boat. I know a lot of people who work in yachting. The last thing they want to do on their time off is be on a boat. But for me, it's kind of the opposite. I mean, I do this as a job because I love sailing so much, in the sense of cruising and sailing on my own little boat. So it's weird, but I think coming from that small sailboat background makes life on board a super yacht a little easier. I don't mind a small cabin because the cabin here is a little bit bigger than the cabin on my boat, so it's not that bad. So if you're coming from normal home life, it can be a little bit of a culture shock or lifestyle shock for some people. You can get used to that white picket fence and the soccer van and the dog in the backyard. We don't really have that, but my lifestyle kind of matches, so it's not so bad for me.
Okay, cool. And so you mentioned you like the Perinis. So let me tell you, I was on Maltese Falcon yesterday. She was having a refit done, so I got to go and see her. And she's a fantastically beautiful yacht. And it really, what you were saying about how sailing is so much more than motor yachts, in the way that so many things you have to be responsible for so many different areas and think about all these different things while you're under sail. So I got to really appreciate that when I was on board yesterday.
She's an amazing boat, just incredible. I can remember when they were building her, Mr. Perkins was the one who kind of brought all that together, and the whole Falcon rig or Dyna rig. And yeah, it's just such an amazing boat. It's actually a work of art, in my opinion. Yeah, she's just so beautiful. Yeah. The rig is something special to behold. There, I think there are a couple more now. There's Black Pearl also a Dyna rig?
Exactly. Yeah.
That boat.
Yeah. Black Pearl just joined the charter market, actually. So you might see her cruising around somewhere near you.
We race against Maltese Falcon quite often because we do regattas on Parsifal. We actually tied with them. I think it was the 2011 Perini Navi Cup in Porto Cervo.
Wow.
They had a first and a third, and we had 2 seconds. So they actually got the bigger trophy, but we tied them on points. Yeah, it's a great boat. We've raced with them in buckets and stuff like that. And a lot of friends have worked on that boat. And yeah, she's really special. You said you saw her in the yard. Which yard is she in, if you can say?
Yeah, she's in Lisbon down in Livorno.
Ah, yeah, I've heard good things. A good friend of mine, I think, is running that yard.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it's nice. There's got a lot of different boats there. They're really busy at the moment. So yeah, she's in good hands.
Yeah, cool.
And I heard the Perini Navi Cup might be making a comeback, actually. So you might be able to, you know, go head-to-head again soon.
Yeah, exactly. No, I heard that too. I heard that rumor. I think it would be amazing. We'd love to do another one, you know. It's obviously it's been a while, and Perini have gone through some changes, but things are looking good for Perini, so that's really good.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And you mentioned that, obviously, the sailing yacht fleet is tiny, 10 to 15%, quite right. But do you think we're seeing a bit more of a kind of a resurgence in popularity of sailing yachts? Obviously, we've got kind of Bezos might be having this big sailing yacht come out, and there seems to be a bit more of an eco-conscious shift. So do you think sailing yachts will become more popular for charter in the future?
I do think so. I think there was a little bit of a dip in the last few years where I think, you know, I talked to a lot of people about this because, you know, Alloy went out of business, Fitzroy went out of business, and then even Perini, you know, the biggest producer of big sailboats, they struggled for a little while. And I heard that it was maybe a new generation of owners, younger people, didn't have the same passion for sale. But I do think that there's a resurgence now, and I think it's coming back, and you're starting to see some really interesting projects coming out. So I've got my fingers crossed, and I definitely hope we get more owners involved in the sailing side. Because, you know, I think it's the best of both worlds, because in many ways, we operate like a motor yacht, but we also have that added fun of getting the sails up and having all that, which they don't get to do, you know, so... I think it's great if it's coming back.
And you've touched on the difference between sailing versus motor yachts, but I wanted to ask about charter versus private yachts. I mean, have you worked on both? You've done some private work?
When I was on Atmosphere, we started charter, I think a year or two after I was already on board. So in that sense, I guess all the boats that I've been on have been charter boats, you know. Obviously, Parsifal is very busy, very successful. She's had a successful career in charter in the Med and the Caribbean. So yeah, I guess pretty much all my boats have been charter. You know, it's I like it because it keeps the boat busy. Boats want to be busy. Boats need to be used. If a boat just sits too long, it's not really good for any boat, big or small. And so that's good. It keeps the crew motivated. Obviously, if you're doing charter, the tips is really nice. That's kind of a nice bonus for crew. And you know, it's a great idea for the right owner, the owner that's open to the idea to help defer some of the costs of owning the boat. So, you know, I think charter is a good way of doing things, but, you know, some boats I know are just private, but, most of my friends working on charter boats.
I think it can be a bit of a challenge though, can't it? Because you don't have an owner who you know their preferences, you know how they like things done. It's kind of every week or every few weeks, a new group of people that you have to get to know. You have to understand their preferences. You have to know how they want to spend their days. And it might be kind of, you know, every time having to learn all that, a bit difficult.
That's true. But I think it's got the benefits because it keeps us on our toes. You know, I mean, what you're describing about the difficulties of, you know, being ready for the next charter, that's kind of just par for the course for us. We don't look at that as a difficult. I think if there were a boat or a crew who had spent all their time on private yachts and really got to know their owners really well and never had other guests on board, then I could see how it would be a challenge. But for myself, it's just, that's just normal. That's just how we do things. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of ready for it. We're used to it. And I think it's nice because the energy that the guests bring on board, you know, they're excited. They're here to have a great holiday. We've got all the tools to give them a great holiday. So, you know, we have a lot of fun. And one of the things, you know, people always ask me, what's the difference between motor yachts and sailing yachts? And it's really hard to put your finger on. There's obviously the obvious difference. We have a rig, we go sailing, we will leave an anchorage, go out and sail around and come back to the same anchorage, which I don't think you ever do on a motor yacht. There's no real reason except to move from A to B on a motor yacht to leave an anchorage. Mm-hmm. But we just do it for fun. But I think one of the big things for me is that it seems like the vibe or the personality of the kind of people that want to charter a sailboat, they're a little less formal, a little more, there's a little closer relationship to the crew. You know, I mean, obviously we still have the same discretion and everything depending on the guests, but it feels more like you're interacting together when people come on board. They get involved in the sailing and, you know, all the crew and the guests. And I think there's something about the kind of people, the personality, the kind of people that like to charter sailboats. And so it's hard to put your finger on, but I think a lot of, like most of my friends, pretty much almost all of them, work on big sailboats. You know, some of them will go over to motor yachts, and we, you know, you've probably heard this, but we call it going over to the dark side because there is a little bit of a rivalry. It's a friendly rivalry, but we, you know, we just, you know, it's not like sailing is better. It's different. In some ways, it's harder. You know, I don't know, something about it. Once you get hooked on it, and it's more work. It's definitely more work dealing with the sails, dealing with the rigging, dealing with all that, dealing with the boat heeling over, stuff going flying all the time. It's definitely harder. But for certain people, I don't know, we're in love with it. And that's the only thing we really want to do. I would, you know, I think it's a bit late now in my career because I'm winding down. But I think it would have been fun to go and drive, you know, a 50-meter motor yacht for a year just to not have to worry about the sails. But I never got around to it because I'm still here. But yeah, there it is, you know.
Yeah, that's.
I just prefer sail.
And I think you're right that clients who prefer sail, they want to actually sail the boat. They really want to get involved, and it's a bit of a different experience than motor yachting probably. And yeah, the challenges must be pretty unique, having to think about all the sails and everything, and also the space constraints. Obviously it's a bit smaller on a sailing yacht, so you've got less room to work with, I guess, but there you go.
Generally there's less volume. I mean, we don't have all those decks, right? You know, when I talk to people about boats in general and what's the perfect boat, I really believe, and I'm not biased, I'm not saying this because I work on one, but I think a 50 meter sailing yacht is like the perfect boat, because the volume-wise, as far as what you need to take care of the boat, it's more like a 40 or 45-meter motor yacht. So, but you have that prestige, I guess you could say, of the side being over 50 meters, but it's not as much boat. And my experience working on motor yachts, a lot of that, all those extra decks, you know, nobody uses them. Yeah. You know, on here, our experience is most people spend all their time in the cockpit, on a swim platform, the aft deck. And if the weather's, you know, a little bit funky or whatever, they'll come into the saloon a bit. But we have more than enough. We have a flybridge. So obviously when we're sailing, people are always up on the flybridge. So we've got enough space on this boat. We don't have any of the downside of being that big, you know. So for me, I think a 50-meter sailboat is like the perfect boat, perfect yeah. super yacht. Because, you know, we want to turn on the key and just motor and there's no wind. We can do that. And basically, we're a motor yacht while we're doing that. So you get the best of both worlds, in my opinion. Although, like you mentioned, we don't have all that extra space. So all that extra space, it can be nice for storage and stuff like that, or if people want to get away from each other. But other than that, it's space you don't really need, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's very true. And I think the swim platform that you have is fantastic. I know there's quite, you know, the way you can dine on it and really get to be by the sea is a really nice feature. You said Parseval was a very popular sailing yacht. So my question for you is, obviously you were on board her for, I think, about 13 years. Is that right?
Yeah, I guess so. I joined full-time in the fall of 2009. So I guess that's 13 years, just over 13 years.
Yeah, I did some. I just some math. My math is cool. But did you know about Below Deck? Were you a Below Deck fan? Because obviously, I feel like your experience is, you know, you were a sailing yacht captain first. You love sailing, and then obviously, Below Deck came along later in time. So, were you aware of it? What do you think of it before you got into it?
I'll be honest. I think the first Below Deck, which is the original, the motor yacht one. I think they're in season 10 is airing right now. I heard about it, but I spend most of my time in Europe. I don't get to watch a lot of broadcast American television. It's just not a thing. So I didn't know that much about it. I knew it was about the industry, and that's very interesting, obviously. But I think I was one of those people that thought it was supposed to be reality TV, but it was maybe contrived, or it was scripted, you know, and that, you know, somebody, a producer would say, okay, today you're going to fight with him and you're going to sleep with her. And that's kind of in my mind what I thought it was. And that's not really my cup of tea. And, you know, obviously when I got involved, I realized it's nothing like that. You know, all they, you know, because I'm on Below Deck Sailing Yacht and I've done a few, I think, you know, a few of them anyway. And, you know, they put the cameras in, they've got camera teams where we don't interact with at all, right? We don't even say good morning to these people. It's part of the fourth wall. We don't break the fourth wall. We just do our job. They film it. And then they edit it down to something that they can put on television and then people watch it. But yeah, there is no script. There's nobody telling us what to do.
No way.
Absolutely. No, there's no script. It's just people running the boat. You know, I mean, obviously the people, you know, they're all bodies. There's no actors. I couldn't act to save my life. Trust me. I'm just doing my job. And on boats, crazy things happen. Remember, you're not seeing all 24 hours every time. You're seeing tidbits of it. Hopefully the most entertaining and interesting tidbits. But what you're seeing is what really happened. No. There's no director. There's no script. Nobody comes and says, Glenn, go and talk to this person. Go and do this. Or can you do it? No. We get guests on board, paying guests. Want to have that experience of being on a super yacht, and we go sailing. It's pretty much the same thing whether the cameras or no cameras, you know. And I don't know if you've seen our show, but you know, we'll do the show, but right after we'll just do regular charges. Pretty much the same thing.
But okay,
but it's definitely not scripted.
But there must be some elements of engineering entertainment. Like I think sometimes they do. There are guests on board that are maybe a bit more kind of eccentric than your average guest, and maybe even crew members as well. I've definitely seen some crew members where they're a bit more kind of maybe put in together on the boat in the hope that there'll be some kind of spark or clash or something like that.
Well, you know, I can only speak for my show because honestly, because I'm so busy and like I live over here, I don't really see a lot. I've seen some of the other shows. I've seen some of the original. I've seen some of Med. And obviously I see some interesting stuff going on and sometimes it's a bit cringy. And I've seen all of our show and sort of crazy stuff goes on there. And there's a lot of stuff. This is kind of an important point. There's a lot of stuff that I only see 6 months later when it's on air because the captain's not everywhere, right? You don't see everything that happens. You hear about stuff happening. You hear maybe somebody hooked up, but you don't know all the details. But on the show, they kind of have a lot of the details. And so I learn about some of that stuff later on when it goes on. It's surprising. Wow, I'm like sometimes I'm a bit shocked. But it's nothing that I don't expect might be happening, you know? But no, there's nothing made up. There's no, you know, I mean, I think maybe the people themselves, the crew, they know they're being filmed. They know they're going to be on TV. Maybe some of them are acting up. But I would say that more so for the other shows, because I'm not sure. But for my show, no, we just get people on, do the job, and it's kind of almost like a documentary to me. Obviously, there's some craziness, but remember, it's what the audience sees and what happens. It's not craziness 24/7. Obviously, we have a job to do when we're on charter. We're very focused on taking care of the guests, whether there's cameras there or not. We want to give them the best experience. They're paying to be on the boat, and it's our, you know, it's our like calling card. It's like, yeah, we want to make sure these guys, whether the guests are a bit crazy. I've seen crazy with cameras. I've seen crazy very crazy without. They get all kinds of people, you know. Maybe some of them would not be allowed to come back, some of the people I've seen on regular charters. Not necessarily on this boat, but so there's crazy stuff that happens for sure.
Okay. So when the show airs, the crew are kind of quaking in their boots, waiting for a text from you to say, you did what? With who? I've just seen it on below deck.
No, I mean, once, listen, the cat's out of the bag, right? Like, what can I do? You know, in some cases, for example, I don't know if you've seen any of our last couple seasons, but Gary, you know, him and I, he came on at the beginning of that season, which was, I think, season two. But he stayed on after, and him and I worked together for 2 or 3 years together. And I kind of know what he's like. I know what to expect. You know, and some of the other crew, after a season, they move on to other things. So by the time I see the show, I'm not living with them. I'm not working with them. What is the point of calling them out for whatever they did, sneaking into a guest cabin, you know, 6 months ago? So no, I don't sweat about it too much. It's, yeah, like I said, some of it makes me cringe a bit, but it is what it is. And that's just what happens, honestly. You know, we're also living in a unique time, because that is one of the things that you'll see on the show, that sometimes the crew, and I've discovered this after the fact, that the crew will sneak off to a guest cabin, obviously when there's no guests on board, okay? And that's not really cool. I think most people say, yeah, you're not really supposed to do that. That's a guest area. You've got your own cabin, you know. But people do meet up and hook up on boats. You know, I've had a relationship with a stewardess on a boat that I worked on. And, you know, that happens because it's our life and job 24/7. So romances will happen. Some boats outlaw them. Other boats live with them. And we're one of the boats that live with them as long as people are discreet about it. But during this crazy time we've been through in the last couple of years with COVID, the option of say, hey, you know, one crew member and another crew member, maybe there's an attraction, whatever, say, hey, let's go for a drink or let's go spend a weekend in a hotel. You didn't have that option during COVID, because you can't do that. You can't interact with the public. You can't go off the boat because super protocols, right? And so if somebody sneaks off to, you know, I've slept in guest cabins on this boat. Sometimes we, you know, sometimes we have crew sleeping for a good reason, because maybe they're doing a changeover. There are too many crew on the boat. But it's at the end of the day, it's just a cabin on the boat. As long as people respect it and don't disrespect it, it's not cool, but it's not the end of the world. You know, that's my philosophy. I know some people will disagree with that. That's fine. But it has been a really unique time, and we've had to adapt in the last couple of years. So maybe that's why, because most of our shows, the last couple anyway, have been during COVID.
So. Okay. So you mentioned there about Gary. So with the crew then, do you have the same crew while you're filming and the same crew when you're just on charter, or is it kind of a mix and match? Was it just Gary that happened to stay after Below Deck wrapped?
It just depends. Like Gary and I have been working together for a couple of years, but we both did season two and season three. I can't go into a lot of detail because there's another season coming up and I'm not allowed to talk about it. But yeah, I mean, these are real crew, you know, and Gary's a great sailor. He's a great guy. So yeah, I was happy for him to stay on. And we just keep running the boat, doing normal charters, no cameras, but basically the same thing.
Okay, cool. So tell me then, how did you get into Below Deck?
Okay. They had the original show, which became very popular. I guess at the network, they said, hey, this is really good. Let's do another one. So they said, what can we do? So he said, okay, why don't we do one about the Mediterranean? So they did that one. That was very popular. And then somebody said, okay, let's do another spinoff. This is my understanding. I don't have all the details, but they said, well, let's do a sailing one because we don't have a sailing one. So they looked to find a sailing boat. Remember, like we said, there's only 10% of the boats. So it's harder to find that right boat. And I think they struggle at first to find the right boat. And because of big sailboats and big sailboat jobs, a few people knew my name. And someone mentioned my name because I kind of connected to a lot of captains. I have a little like a email network with a lot of big sailboat captains. And so someone said, why don't you reach out to this guy, Glenn? He might be able to help you find a boat that maybe isn't on the charter market, but he can go through the captain to the owner and see if they're interested. So they contacted me on that basis. And I said, yeah, of course I'll help you try to find a boat. I said, but maybe our boat might be available. We weren't doing charter at the time. We were up for sale and we had stopped chartering for a bit when that happened. But I said, yeah, let me. And I spoke to the owner and we talked back and forth and they weren't sure where they wanted to film and all this stuff. But when it came down to it, they came out, had a look at the boat. They met me, some of my crew, and said, you know, would you be interested? I said, I don't know if I want to be on TV, but it would be nice if you guys use the boat because it would be good for us to get back into charter. And that's kind of how it started. And I wasn't sure I wanted to be involved, but looking back, I'm really glad I did it because it's such a cool experience to see how they make this show. You wouldn't believe what goes into it. And the professionalism of all of the people involved, and not a lot of people involved. It's an amazing experience and it's a lot of fun. It's interesting. And then of course there are other benefits for me as someone who, you know, like I have a large following on social media that I have opportunities to monetize, even if I want to step away from super yachting as an onboard captain, it opens up other avenues. In that way, I'm happy I'm involved. I was a little hesitant because I think back when we started, there was some negativity in the industry. It's like they said, if you go on that show, it's kind of a career killer. But I felt, listen, I'm late enough in my career. This is important for the boss to get the business. If I have to do the job as captain, which made sense if they wanted me to, and it turned out they did. Then I figured, why not? I'll do it. You know, I didn't have much to lose. And in the end, I'm glad I did it. You know, I'm glad I did it.
Okay. And so then was the owner on board? Was he really keen for it? Or did he take a bit of persuading?
No, he took a bit of persuading. You know, it's not a typical thing. It's like, there were a question of where we're going to change the name of the boat. You know, there's two sides to it. I think some people say like any advertising is good advertising, or, you know, so maybe it's good to have the boat name out there in the wider world. People see it. The boat was already kind of famous as a pretty busy charter boat, but, we've done three seasons of the show. And so I think he must have been happy, you know, doing it, or he wouldn't have come back for a second season.
Yeah.
So, I think overall it's been good. You know, and his experience has been good.
It's uncharted territory. There's no rule book onto, you know, how to go on below deck and how you can expect everything to be managed and, you know, pan out, I guess. It's very different.
Yeah, and I think the show, I think they're in their 23rd season if you put all the shows together. Five different shows now, right? You've got the original, you've got Med, you've got Sailing, which was the third one, and you've also got Down Under, which is filmed in Australia, and then Adventure, which is filmed in Norway. And so it's growing. My understanding is very popular. You know, it's actually I just heard this week from a lot of friends and people I've, you know, work with in the industry. It's now on Netflix here in Europe. The season one of Below Deck Sailing is on Netflix. So a lot of people in Europe, where I think it had been already in Scandinavia and other markets where English shows translate better, whatever. But I don't think it'd been on France and Italy and Spain, but now it's on Netflix over here. So it's growing and I'm happy for it. Talking about doing the show, I was a little bit nervous, but my philosophy from the beginning was like, if anyone complains to me about the show, I'm like, dude, you're the one watching it. Turn the channel. If you don't like it, go find something you like. You know, some people like it. And I think, especially during COVID, I heard this from a lot of fans of the show, is they bonded and it helped them get through. You remember at the beginning of COVID when we were home confinement and everyone was glued to Netflix. And so a lot of people back in this North America were watching Below Deck Sailing Yacht because we came out right at that time. But all the feedback I've had, you know, interacting with other, especially big sailboat captains, they're always telling me, hey, dude, movie star or this or that. And it's like, you know, my wife loves your show. You know, I've had owners who have reached out to me and I've done little, hey, you know, it's Captain Glenn videos for them and stuff. So I think a lot of people, I think our show anyway has a pretty good reception. And, you know, it is what it is. But at the end of the day, it's light entertainment. And if it keeps people's mind off their, you know, mundane routine problems, then I'm happy for it, you know?
Yeah. Okay. And I think, so we mentioned earlier that obviously what you see on Below Deck can be sometimes a bit scandalous or a bit dramatic, but that is pretty much all yachts, that there's no, it's not being amped up for Below Deck. That is just the way the industry goes. But do you think that shining a light on it in the way that Below Deck does brings any kind of negative light towards yachting? Do you think we're portraying yachting in the best way?
That's a really good question. I think if you wanted to shine a light on super yachting and not shine that light into the dark corners and just kind of give this glossy, idealized view of super yachting, you could do that, but nobody would want to watch it. And I think that's what it is. I think it's a fine balance between what the audience wants to see. You know, we say this sometimes when there are no cameras around, we're on a regular charter, everything's running smoothly, nothing's going wrong, and we're like, I'm glad this isn't on TV because this would be boring as hell. A perfectly run boat without any issues is not going to make good TV. So you're going to, I don't know. I guess it comes down to if people don't like it, don't watch it. I don't personally think what happens on this boat and on this show, I don't think it's hurting the industry. People in the industry know a little bit more than the audience because they do it night and day. They know kind of what happens. And they have to take that with a grain of salt or grain of sand and say, it's somewhat representative, but I don't think it's completely misrepresents the industry. I wouldn't buy that. Not at all.
Okay.
I think the craziness and the interesting stuff is maybe compressed. None of it's made up, but it is what it is. And I think in my career anyway, I've seen a lot of these kind of things going on.
Yeah. It's interesting though, there is definitely an element of snobbiness. Some people really think that Below Deck is like, you know, people take a lot of pride in saying, oh, I don't watch Below Deck, you know, which I always find funny because, well, I guess it's just where you land on, you know, what you think it brings to the industry. But do you think it brings any merit to the industry? Do you think it inspires people to get involved as crew or inspires them to charter even?
Well, I think the included people who are going to watch it, I think they're going to say, you know, they're going to be able to put it together and realize that they're watching a TV show. It's meant to be entertaining. So it's not all just hooking up. There's a lot of hard work involved. But I think that, some people ask me if I thought it's attracting the wrong element. I think you want to attract as many people as possible. It's hard finding crew right now. I think of COVID and the big quitting, it's actually hard right now to find crew. We want to attract people. Obviously, we want to attract the right kind of people, but that's our jobs as captains and department heads to pick the best, to pick the cream of the crop. So if there are more people and maybe they're getting the wrong idea from the show and they're coming in, well, just don't pick those people. But I think it's also a good thing. Like I said, when I started in the industry, I had no clue. There was no TV show about how this worked. There was nothing. Didn't know how the salaries worked, didn't know if you got paid, didn't know anything about it. And so in that sense, I think it's good that people, I call super yacht or super yacht crew like square pegs and round holes. We don't fit into normal corporate cubicle lifestyle. We need something a little bit different. And that's why we end up here. And I think for those people in society who didn't know that this existed, I think that's a good thing that they can say, hey, well, maybe I should try that. I get parents and young people contacting me because of Big Sailboat Jobs and because of Below Deck saying, you know, my daughter, my son, or I want to get into this industry. You know, obviously they see it on TV, but they know they got to know that it's not always like that. And they, you know, when we're on charter, you can see it on the show. We're not drinking and partying. The young crew have a bit of a drink in between charters when they're pretty much on their own time, you know? And so just like in the real world, people go out to a club on Friday night, people work in offices, you know, people like to party. That's fine. Young people love to party. So I think most people, if it opens up their eyes to something different is out there and helps them try, you know, maybe say, hey, maybe that's a career that would be good for me, then I think that's a good thing. You know, so I think, it's social media and being on television, it's like it's a tool that can put it out there. And then we as people who are going to hire crew, we've got to filter through and get the right element there. But I don't think it helps. I think it raises awareness that this industry even exists, because for a lot of people, if you don't live near a coast, you never see these boats. If it weren't for the TV shows, a lot of people, you know, occasionally they're in the news, like, a billionaire builds hundreds of million dollar yacht, and so you see it. But otherwise, if you don't live near the coast, you don't even know these boats exist unless you see them in a movie or a TV show. So in that way, I think it's good.
Yeah, so there is some merit that it brings. Yeah, it's good to hear. And so you mentioned being the head of the department. And I think one thing that concerns me when I watch Below Deck is I feel stressed for you because you're managing so many people and also the film crew, I guess. What's the logistics there? Are you responsible for everyone's safety on board? Do you have like a second person that's responsible for the film crew? How does it work?
That's a really interesting question. Obviously, as a captain on a boat, if the boat, you know, you're responsible for everyone. So yeah, that is a big responsibility. But we're very, very focused on safety. But on day to day, I'm just a captain on a boat. The film crew don't exist for me. I see them, but they don't exist. They're like flies on the wall. So I'm not, obviously, if something were to happen, if one of them were to fall down the stairs while filming, I'm going to be involved. I'm going to do whatever I can. If there's a way we can prevent that, obviously, we're going to do all that. But I'm not the only person. They have their producers, and they're involved in safety. One thing that we do, just as we give new joining crew, a safety familiarization, walk them through the boat, show them where all the life-saving appliances, where everything is, all the firefighting, we do that also, not so much for the firefighting, because that's not their responsibility, but they're made aware of all the safety aspects of the boat. We take all the production that are coming on the boat. Not all of them come on the boat. There's a lot of people in the back on the eat that never come on the boat. It's a big operation. But the ones that are coming on the boat at the beginning of the season, I will take them around in a couple of groups and hey, be careful. This hatch opens and it's a 6-foot drop. So don't back up into that. And try not to step across the cushions, because you're going to dirty them and then we're going to have to clean them. So all these different aspects, but they're given really good training. A lot of the same people come back year after year. So they know it, but we give them the training over and over. But they, again, of course I'm responsible, but they're kind of in their own department. I'm not talking to the film crew at all during the day. Occasionally some small thing, if I have a problem with my mic, I'll interact with someone, they'll fix my mic and that's it. I have no interaction with them. They work on their side, we work on our side. And I liaise a little bit with one of the producers who, you know, if something comes up, then I have someone to talk to. But I don't say good morning to camera people. I say good morning to the mic person, because they come in my cabin in the morning and they put the mic on me. So as they're putting the mic, I can say good morning to them. It's not, you know, but as soon as that mic's on, they don't exist for us. They, you know, we're watching out for them, but they don't exist. We're not interacting with them at all. They're the fourth wall. And it's like they're the audience in a theater. You know what I mean? And we're on stage. And so we don't recognize, we don't react to them at all.
That is so interesting. I had no idea it was so fly on the wall. That is really, really baffling to me.
Think about it as a documentary. I mean, obviously, what's the line between documentary reality show? I mean, you're seeing the life of crew on a yacht while they're working, while they're on charter, while they're off charter, all the crazy stuff that happens off charter too. But yeah, there's, that's how it works. They come here before the day we start filming, that's it. There's no, you know, they've got on their cameras, like they had like fourth wall written on their cameras, like, don't stare at me and interact with me. I'm not here. I don't exist. It's just a way for them to get the footage of what's happening, you know? But yeah, it's just us. We get the guests on board and we go and have fun. We go sailing and it's all filmed and then it's edited and shown on television.
I wanted to ask, I'm not sure, maybe I'm not allowed to ask this, so feel free to not answer, but has there ever been any like your crew and film crew crossover, either a clash, a romantic, anything like that? Or is it really, really, they do their job, the boat does its job, and there's no crossover?
No, it's a wall of separation. At the end of the season, when we've finished everything, we usually have a chance to chat and learn a bit about who they are. And sometimes we know them from previous seasons. But no, during the season, no, it's completely separated. completely separated, except for, like I said, I interact a little bit with, you know, one of the like producer, you know, executive producer, that just for logistics, stuff like that, to make sure that the right people are on the boat at the right time that we leave and stuff. So we don't leave a camera person on the dock by mistake, that kind of thing. But that's, you know, just little bits here and there. So most of the day I'm just running the boat.
And have we got a new season about to air, or is it already airing? No.
Yeah. My understanding, you know, we're not allowed to talk about future seasons. So I can't give you too much detail, but I can say, because it was now, I was at BravoCon, which is like the big convention of all the different Bravo shows, which are part of that, you know, where below, all the different shows from Below Deck are. I was there in New York, I think it was October, and they announced season 4 of Sailing. So it's out there that season 4 is coming. In the first 3 seasons, we were, I think, already on the air sometime in February. So I think the other shows have just pushed us further along. And I think, don't quote me on this because I don't know, you know, but I think it's coming soon. I think it'll be on soon. But I think our show will follow the one that's airing now. But I don't know. That's just how it's happened in the past. So,
yeah, you were meant to air in February.
Yeah, well, I mean, last time it aired in February, it doesn't mean it's going to air in February. It may never air. You know, people film shows and never get on air. You know, that happens too. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think our show's doing quite well. But all I can say is, I can't even say if I'm on the show. You do the math. But because I don't think that's been announced. But I can say that a fourth season was, as far as I saw it on, you know, social media, fourth season was announced. So I'm on season 4. Well, yay! But yeah, I can't obviously say who else is on. But what I can say is, you know, I think especially season 2 and season 3 were really good seasons. And I think season 4 is going to be very much like that. I think it's going to be a really great season. So the people that love the show, I think they're going to be really happy with season 4. There's a lot of fun stuff, a lot of cool stuff, a lot of interesting stuff. But yeah, and I'll be there. I'm inseparable from Parsifal, because this is my real job. That's why I'm here now on the boat, right?
Yeah, yeah, okay. And can you tell me anything more about season 4? Where it is? Where it's being shot? Anything?
Those are the kind of, or it's all, no, hush. That's not my place. That's definitely the network who owns the show. That's all for them to say, all that kind of stuff. But I will say, keep an eye out, because just based on history, I think there's going to be an announcement soon, but I don't know when. It could be in the next few weeks, or could be in the next couple of months. But, you know, unless something really crazy happens, I think we'll follow the original, because that's what we've done the last 3 years.
Okay. And so you said you went to BravoCon, and so I guess you must know Captain Lee and Captain Sandy in real life.
Well, you know, I've chatted with them online. We did a video podcast interview that went up on YouTube, Captain Sandy, Captain Lee, and Captain and myself. And so we did a little bit of that. I've done a few things with Sandy, but I'd never met them in person. So at BravoCon, I met Captain Lee and his lovely wife, Captain Sandy, her partner. And I met Captain Carey and Captain Jason from Down Under in Norway. And so all 5 of us were together at BravoCon, and we had a blast. It was very cool. They're really great people. Yeah, I was in really good company. Really, a lot of fun.
It's so interesting how you all obviously got into yachting for a passion for boating, and then you all ended up as TV stars, like real reality show TV stars.
I don't consider myself as TV star. I just consider myself a dude who just, his job happens to be on a TV show. The whole TV star thing is kind of weird for me.
I was going to ask, do you get self-conscious ever? Like when you meet other captains who aren't on TV, and they kind of are looking at you like, you know, you're a celebrity, and I don't know if they see you that way, but do you ever feel a little bit like, oh, everyone's seen me on TV already. Everyone knows me. Everyone's watched me do my job.
I don't, you know, that's a good question. No, I'm not really self-conscious about it. You know, like I said, guys bring it up. They'll say, hey, my wife, it's usually the wife loves the show, you know, and I'm like, you know, do you watch it at all yourself? But no, it doesn't bother me. It is what it is. You know, I made the decision to be on the show when I was invited to be on the show. And you got to live with that. But like I said, I'm happy I did it. I don't have any regrets. And now with all this stuff, like, you know, I didn't have to pay to go to BravoCon, right? They brought me out there, put me in a great hotel, and it was an amazing. I met amazing fans. That was kind of a rock star experience because we were mostly behind the scenes doing like meet and greets, photo shoots, and stuff like that. But there was somebody that was out, had a booth out on the floor, and I wanted to go chat with them. So the person was taking care of me, brought me out on the floor at BravoCon, and it's a big event. And I got mobbed. It was like, I felt like Mick Jagger, you know, landing at the airport, because it was like, Captain Glenn, and they all came running up to me, taking selfies. It was amazing. That was a really cool experience. I now start to get recognized a bit here in Europe, like where we are now. There are a lot of British people around, and the show's on in the UK. So they will see the boat. They'll see me walk off the passerelle, and they'll, you know, they'll say, "Oh, Captain Glenn." So we'll chat. And often they are sailors themselves, you know, because obviously sailors love that show, right? Especially the sailing yacht one. So I'll stop and chat with them and stuff like that. So that's kind of cool. But when I'm in North America, it happens more often. It's kind of there's a novelty to it. It's fun, but I know I'm just a normal dude. I just happen to be on TV because of my job, you know?
Okay. All right. But I see that I think both Captain Sandy and Captain Lee, Captain Lee's definitely written a book. I know Sandy has her podcast. What's next for you? Do you think you might do something similar? Capitalize on your fame and
I don't know. I mean, I haven't decided, but you know, even I've kind of led a kind of a crazy life. Like super yachting is like the most normal thing I've done in my job in my life. So I have kind of led an interesting life with a lot of travel. I've lived in a lot of different places. I've been, you know, lived in Tokyo for 5 years. I lived in Australia. I lived in Hong Kong. You know, all over Europe. Even before the show, people say, when I talk my different stories, you know, they would say, oh, you should write a book. So it's always been in the back of mind. I don't know that my life is that interesting, but maybe I'll do it. You know, why not? If I can get a book deal, why not? But I like the idea of sharing.
You just said your life was absolutely crazy. So how is that not book material? How have you not been signed yet?
But I'm a very chilled out. That's one odd thing about me. And if you've been in the industry or you know a lot of industry people, you know that there's a lot of partying. There's a lot of drinking, especially that goes on in the industry. And I'm a very light drinker. You know, I don't drink much. So I'm kind of an oddball in this industry. I'm not a partier. I started late in this industry. I was, believe it or not, I shouldn't say this because it's dating me, but I started as a deckhand at 41 years old in this industry. Now, yeah.
I'm no spring chicken.
I was lucky. I think I looked a little bit younger than my age, and I'm not a big guy, so maybe that played into it, you know. But yeah, I mean, I get people reach out to me all the time in that age group, and I'd say, listen, it's not impossible, but it's not easy. It's not, you know, it's not going to be easy. But if you find the right boat, you can do that late start. It worked for me, but I think it's not easy, right? Because the problem with it is that you're standing next to a 20-year-old, you know? But I think I looked a little bit younger and I got away with it. And the lucky thing for me was I'd already had my boat for, I think, 8 years by then, and I'd cruised extensively around the Met. So I knew what a bowline was. I didn't have to learn boating. I just had to learn about big boats and stuff like that. So, and I kind of quickly rose up the ranks because I knew I wanted to do it as a career. Once I think after a few months doing it, I thought, yes, this is exactly what I want to do. So I knew I was career minded, like long term. But yeah, maybe cut that bit out, or just cut the bit out about the 41 when you play the broadcast. But yeah,
I think that's so interesting.
Yeah, but then everyone knows how old I am now because I told them how long I've been yachting. But anyway, it doesn't matter. It's no secret. But yeah, so I got lucky in that sense. Yeah.
You did get to, it's fantastic to get to, you know, where you are. You got there remarkably quickly then.
Yeah, I mean, I lucked out. I was in the right place at the right time. You know, I went through and got all my tickets. It was that point when I joined, a lot of people were getting class 4 tickets, were the early tickets. And I think a lot of people were fibbing about their experience to get through the process quickly. And I think the MCA especially figured it out, and they said, okay, now we're going to start this new OOW program where you have to have 3 years on a crew list to get your OOW after getting a yacht master, and then another year to get your captain 500, another year to get your captain 3000. So I said, you know, that sounds good to me. And I started on that path immediately. And I got my 3000, you know, not long before I got on this boat, and a buddy called me, you know, they needed a captain real quick. Buddy said, hey, I know a guy. They gave me a call, and I came on the boat a couple of days later. Captain had already left, and that's kind of how it started. So I got lucky, right place, right time, you know, but that's how it happens. But in order to capitalize on that luck, you have to be ready, you know, and I guess I was ready because I'm still here. But I definitely got lucky throughout my career. I mean, I've been doing this 23 years, and literally, and, you know, I've only been on, I think, 5 boats. But literally, there was only that 1 week when I got off the motor yacht in Monaco. I was living behind a foie gras shop in Antibes for a week. And that was the only week I've been out of work looking for work. You know, there's only been 1 week in my 23 years where I actually wanted a job and didn't have one. You know.
Wow. I think that's not just luck. I think that's hard work as well.
Yeah, I think that plays part of it. But honestly, in my case, I think it was a little bit of luck. But it's worked out. And now I'm very close to the end of my career. I want to spend more time cruising on my boat and traveling, but I still love what I do. I don't hate what I do. So that's why I'm still kind of dabbling in it, but I'm not full time on the boat anymore. There are 2 captains now here on Parsifal, and we take turns.
So I really enjoyed hearing about your lucky career, and I can only hope there'll be a book in the future. And very much looking forward to seeing you on season 4. Thank you, Captain Glenn.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you for listening to this big boat interview. I hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget to tune in every week for news and updates from the Boat Briefing podcast. And hopefully you'll be hearing a little bit more from me going forward as well. This episode was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next time.